Hello, this is Heidi McAlpine, occupation therapy educator for Stony Brook University and Touro College. I'm here with Christine Koppel-Gray and Josh Folk, occupational therapy students for Stony Brook University. And we are here to present another Well Matters podcast, Worldly Empowerment, Living and Learning. And since May is Mental Health Month, we are here interviewing Family Service League Board, Karen Borstein, President and CEO, Jonathan Chenkin, Vice President for Development, and Dave Sullivan, Director of Flexible Employment Plan. And the mission of Family Service League is to help individuals, children, and families to mobilize their strengths and improve the quality of their lives at home, in the workplace, and in the community. And as occupational therapists, we connect to their mission because we are an inclusive profession that maximizes health and well-being and quality of life for all people, populations, and community through evidence-based interventions to help provide effective solutions that facilitate participation in everyday living. And Family Service League restores hope and rebuilds lives by providing education, support, and services to empower individuals and communities. They have 60 programs in approximately 21 locations, mainly in Suffolk County, Long Island. And they have 700 professionals and support personnel on Long Island to support the communities and provide education that empowers. So I hope that you enjoyed this podcast. It is informative and it provides you with the information that you are looking for that creates empowerment. Thank you and enjoy. So we're here with Well Matters Podcast, and Well stands for Worldly Empowerment, Living and Learning. And I am Heidi McAlpine, occupational therapist and professor at Stony Brook and Touro College. And I'm here with my two students, Joshua Falk and Christine Koppel-Gray. And we're here at Family Service League speaking with three of the employers here that help run the program and help determine the programs that help to support the community. And if you could just introduce yourselves, sure. That would be great.
Sure. Well, thank you. I'm Karen Borstein. I'm the president and CEO of Family Service League, and I have been with the organization for going on 26 years, not always as a CEO, but in other positions. I started out here as an assistant director and then moved up to associate executive director, chief operating officer, and then when my predecessor retired, the board appointed me to succeed him. So I've been at FSL for a lot of years.
What interests you to go in this direction, Karen?
God, I mean, that's a question everyone always asks. How'd you get into social work, right? You know, I think for me it was, I had a mother who had MS and in a very severe case of it. And I really felt like, you know, people with disabilities or an illness were looked at, you know, certainly back, I mean, we're going back a lot of years now, that, you know, they would see someone who's handicapped and look at it in almost a stereotypical fashion of, like, you know, casting doubt or looking down upon that person. So I think I always developed this passion to help the underdog and people who had less than or the underserved. And you know, without consciously thinking of that, when I went into social work school and college and graduate school, I wasn't thinking about that. But over the years, as people ask this question, you really ponder it. I think that probably for me was the most compelling piece, to try to help people who weren't getting served in the way that they should or be treated the way they should.
And I agree with you, because through my own personal experience, mm-hmm. working with people with disabilities helped me to motivate myself in that direction.
Right.
And like you had mentioned too, is I did not realize what my motivation was consciously. Mm-hmm. But as I move along and I right. realize the direction that I tend to go and where I extend, I share that same thing with
yeah.
you.
Yeah,
yeah. So thank you for sharing a little bit about yourself. And it's been a pleasure to have you so far. And I'm interested to find out more.
Okay.
And we have Jonathan here also. Could you please explain a little bit more about yourself and who you are?
Sure. I am Jonathan Chenkin. I'm the VP for Development at Family Service League. I've been in the nonprofit sector for about 20 years, originally starting on the program side of things, running many different programs for a youth program, youth agency, and then transitioned slowly into the development or fundraising side of things.
That's the fun side of things, right? The finding the funding, the support to get the program.
Some people do call it fundraising.
We do have
a good time.
Yeah, so that's good. It's good to feel that passion together as a group. And it sounds like you both have that passion and that fire to drive you. It takes a lot of energy.
Absolutely.
It takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
Coming to the nonprofit, I mean, for me, to the nonprofit side of things, from the for-profit side of things, was really a labor of love for wanting to have work that had meaning, deeper meaning. So making money was one thing, but making money and improving the lives of others in some way, or developing youth in some way, was definitely a draw for me. So that's why I moved over to that side of nonprofit and stayed with them.
I like what you had to say, Jonathan, as far as meaningful and purposeful. I think as an occupational therapist, that's what we do, is to find those things that drive people and to help break down their barriers and break it down into little bits of information to help them bring that together so that they do break down those barriers and find what brings meaning and purpose to them. Mm-hmm. So thank you for sharing that. And here we have Dave Sullivan also with us today, too. Thank you for that. We appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule as well.
My pleasure. So I came into the field in a kind of unusual way. I was a history major in college, and I wasn't really sure what direction I was going in. And I went to school with a lot of folks that were special ed majors. And I don't think it really, I knew the impact it had on me until later on in life. I was in sales, I was in publishing, insurance, and similar to Jonathan, I was kind of looking for something meaningful, and that wasn't really working out for me. And then I was fortunate to learn a little bit about vocational services. I ran into a gentleman at the Developmental Disabilities Institute, and he was really looking for people to develop jobs in the community for people with disabilities, but he didn't want a social worker. He wanted somebody that had a little bit of sales background. So I kind of came in through the back door, and I just loved it. I enjoyed it so much, and I really felt like I was sort of selling human potential. And once I was hooked, that was it, and I stayed in social work, and I've been in vocational services pretty much ever since. I ran a mental health day program for a while with a strong vocational component, and I've been with the agency about 15 years now.
Yeah, I see you going in different directions, and a lot of that is with funding, and we talked mm-hmm. about looking for grants because there's so many different nonprofits out there, and we need to support those programs that we're so passionate about and providing to the communities, and that's really what this is about. You have so many different programs mm-hmm. that you have to offer. Can you share some of those programs and the direction that you see yourself going, say, in the next 5 years to support the community?
Sure. Well, some of it certainly involves, you know, OT, but we do. We're a very large multi-service organization serving everyone from children right through seniors. And what I would tell you is probably some of the biggest areas that are continue to grow certainly are helping young people, young adults with vocational services that, you know, not every child is going to fit that mold of getting their high school diploma, going on to college, you know, that we have to help youngsters, young adults who are dropping out of school, just not attending, with those who feel like they need to do something else. That we offer services through, as you know, through the flexible employment program for adults, as well as now a newer track for young adults from like 14, 15 through 21. So I see that as an area that we've often talked about for years at Family Service League, and the funding just was never around to get it, and now it's becoming available. So that's certainly a piece, and you know, we could see OT certainly playing a role in that. And the other very large area for us, which continues to grow by leaps and bounds, is behavioral health. And, you know, that speaks to some of the what you see going on today here in Bayshore, a new building being built. We just opened a new program in HOPOG, DASH, Diagnostic Assessment and Stabilization Hub. That's a 24-hour crisis stabilization program. and really designed to meet the needs of anyone, a child, 5 and up, adult, who's struggling with a mental health issue or substance use issue, that oftentimes an emergency room isn't really equipped to handle someone who has a psychiatric problem. So here at our center, we have an interdisciplinary team that someone walks in and they need help, we will help and stabilize them. It's not, you know, a respite for days, it's up to 24 hours at a time, and we will link that person, get them stabilized, do an assessment, do an evaluation, and get them linked to other services. And I don't mean just linked by saying, here you go, here's a card, go see this agency. But literally, we have shared calendars with other providers that we will be able to look in the calendar, say, oh, you live closest to this organization. We're going to get an appointment tomorrow morning. They're holding a slot. Here you go. And we will do the follow-up as well to make sure the person gets there. So behavioral health is huge. Substance use and abuse is huge. And the Health and Wellness Center, which you see being constructed here, is really looking to expand what we do in both mental health and substance use. And in addition, and we do it here, currently in the current building we're in Bayshore, primary care. And that's provided by Northwell Health as our partner for primary care. And what we have seen is our clients who have, you know, insurance cards and Medicaid, we started this program back in 2011. They may have their PCP list on their card, but they're not going. And that's what we find, that they're certainly so involved in addressing mental health issues that they really don't look at the warning signs. Oh, I feel a little palpitation. I better go to my cardiologist. Or I'm a woman and I haven't had a mammography or this or that. So what we found by initiating it here and have it on site with our other programs, the therapist can say to the client, who they now have established a relationship with and trust, say, listen, you haven't had a medical exam, we need to get your glucose, your cholesterol checked. I'm going to walk down the hallway here and you're going to go see one of our doctors, get you an appointment. And again, we have found greater compliance with the medication, reduction in going to the emergency room to use that as their PCP, and overall better health, that we really have arrested, you know, potential diabetes. We have found melanomas on clients to say we have to get you to, you know, a dermatologist or oncologist. So for all those things, those are some of the directions we're going in to really do increase behavioral health and services, integrating primary care. And last but not least is housing and homeless services. I mean, on any given night in Suffolk County, there are about 500 people who don't have a shelter, a roof over their head. And Family Service League has a number of shelters here in Suffolk County, both for individuals as well as families. And our goal, and I have to tell you, our Cracker Jack staff, is to get the consumers into permanent housing. And it is not easy. It's not easy for a lot of reasons, because of the subsidy they get is insignificant. Right. And housing, affordable housing on Long Island is almost an oxymoron. It's very difficult to find. But I have a Cracker Jack staff who have really, over the last few months, told me recently they housed 130 families. I think in about a 6-month period, and that's incredible. So, you know, we do lots of good things, and certainly, you know, our flexible employment program is an integral part of it. It's, you know, one of my favorite programs, graduations to go to at the end of each year, because you really see how people can change. You know, you put the attention to them, give them the skill sets, have a supportive staff like Dave and Sue, the instructor, and others. They know that the consumers know they care about them, and exactly. That's so significant, and helped me to say, look, this is what I need to make my life better, whether it's getting OT or someone else to assist, other resources. Our consumers graduate from flexible employment, I was going to say FEP, but flexible employment program, getting jobs. And Dave was saying something the other day that, you know, we're even doing better than we used to do, getting them into higher level jobs, not just entry level, which is absolutely fine, but right. Those who can take a little bit higher grade or step in a position, that's what we do. And Dave and the staff are terrific.
Yeah, I cannot say enough about Dave. Mm-hmm. And Sue Festa.
Yeah,
they are a powerhouse.
Yep.
Together.
Yep.
They work very hard.
I know.
They've got compassion.
Mm-hmm.
They're passionate about what they do.
Right.
The students at the Flexible Employment Plan feel that energy. It's a family. And that's what we've heard over and over again. And I talk with the students about that as well, how important support is and to feel supported.
Yeah.
And to know that if you have a question, if you have doubts, somebody will find you the answer.
Correct.
Because what happens is, if you don't have those answers, you fall back on what you once knew.
Right. Right. And most importantly, like our tagline, Restore Hope, Rebuild Lives.
Yeah.
If someone here feels like someone respects them and gives them hope and a reason to believe, all of a sudden that makes a huge difference to say, well, I'm going to class there because I know Dave and Sue believe in me and they know I can do this and they've given me the confidence to get through the coursework and do that. And that comes from their compassion and their empathy and really, you know, towing the line, you know, really helping them understand this is what you need to do to accomplish this. But they do it with, as you said, such compassion and empathy that it, you know, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah. So, Jonathan, I've heard a lot about other people's role here. Tell me a little bit about your role with the five-year plan and where Family Service League is expanding and how you play an integral part of that.
So, my role here is really to, it takes a couple of different turns. I head up the volunteer efforts here. So we have about 400 operative volunteers.
Wow.
We're always looking for more. I also do the public relations and communications piece here. So all the press releases and calendar events and things that you might read, the social media, those kinds of things. But also, I also have a fair amount to say about the granting process here and how and what we're looking at, what we're applying for. And one of the ways that I was just telling Dave the other day that his program plays so much into what I do is that if you have a funder, let's say, who's giving you money, right, for a program or for all your general programs, and that funder is investing in your organization, they want to see results, right?
Right.
They want to see your outcomes. That's what they
exactly.
ask for. Periodically, they'll get a report in 4 months or 6 months during the granting life of the grant cycle, telling them what you have done with their funds. Well, one of the ways that Dave's program plays in is that we can also assist those funders, those companies, specifically for corporate grants, in a source for employment. So now not only are they seeing that they've invested in a nonprofit, that they're reading some of these outcomes, but they can actually reap the benefits of some of these investments by way of having an employee come to their organization and then start and be a productive part of their company. So that is really a way of enhancing that relationship. So, I mean, going forward in you say, a five-year plan, you know, we have a lot of programs that we need to fund, but certainly I think that FEP, in more than almost any of the other programs, not only is it a program that we fund, but it's a program that can help me get funding for other programs just by virtue of the fact that it can be so good for a company to experience that, you know, influx of employees from the work that they're paying for to get done. So that's really a positive way.
Yeah, and just through learning all that Family Service League has to offer to all populations mm-hmm. at right. all levels mm-hmm. really fuels my passion. And that's why I was so thankful for Dave giving us the opportunity and Sue to taking the time mm-hmm. with the students to understand this as well. And that they are fueled through my passion and through the passion that is brought here by all the employees that I hope, my hope someday is to have a full-time staff OT here to be able to offer that even more all year round. Because as it is right now, it's the school funding me to come here and it's
yeah.
8 hours.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, Sue and Dave, they put in their time to give the support to the students and
right.
also to help with that productivity within the job skills in the flexible employment plan.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be my passion at some point to make that happen because I see it of such value.
Right.
And I see both of our missions together mm-hmm. connecting. And I don't know if you know our organization, AOT, American Occupational Therapy Association's mission. Are you familiar with that at
all? I read a little bit about it, yes.
A little bit. I'm just going to read it out loud so we can all hear it. And then I'm going to connect it to Family Service League because I think it's such a great marriage to make great things happen for everybody. So AOTA's vision for 2025 is we're an inclusive profession. We include everyone of all disabilities. We want to, occupational therapy wants to maximize health, well-being, and I think that's a great connection with the Health and Wellness Center, and quality of life for all people, which we talked about, making them part of society, giving them those opportunities, and communities through effective solutions. We talked about that through grants, through the different programs where you see Family Service League expanding, including the health and wellness, the homeless. There's so much of a need and a gap that needs to be filled that I think we can combine and work together. That facilitates participation in everyday living. Everyday living from taking care of yourself, ADLs, activities of daily living, to job skills, to parenting, which Family Service League has. And, and you know, I just, every time I talk to someone, I go, we have an OT for that. We could fit in here and really work together to make this happen. And then Family Service League's vision, which I love, is helps individuals, children, families to mobilize their strengths. So you're looking at them from a strength-based model, which OT does as well. Not looking at what they can't do, what they're capable of, and building on that. And that's the rebuilding, which I love. Rebuilding lives, and to improve the quality of lives at home, in the workplace, in the community. And now you're looking at different contexts. We're looking at the person's environment. Where are they? How are they functioning within that environment? Is it in the flexible employment plan? Is it in the workplace? Is it at home? Is it in the community? Are they being included within the community?
Right.
You may get skills, but the community is not inviting them because they don't have those accommodations. And occupational therapy can come into that and play a role and help them understand how that can happen.
Well, on the vocational end, that was one of the big things that we saw when we first started working with OTs, is this idea of function, improving function. And I think initially, like most folks, I thought that occupational therapists were a little bit more on the physical end. And I didn't realize that you came from mental health. So that was a big learning curve, that you actually started with mental health. So as soon as we, I wouldn't call it a risk, but as soon as we brought OTs in, it was the first time we had done that, we quickly saw how you could play a huge role in improving function. And whether it's organizing your day before you go to work, how you prepare, whether it's nutrition, exercise, organizing workspaces, taking into consideration a person's individual disability or challenges. So it didn't take long to see the value. And I think that's why we've continued to have this relationship. And, you know, you're growing with us. And that's kind of where we're at now.
I think, I mean, from our perspective, it ended up being a really great combination, because most of us haven't seen community mental health before we get into the program. Most of us have just seen the physical end of it. So for us to have the opportunity to come out and participate in community mental health, it was a very special experience for us. And I'm sure Josh will agree with me, it 100% changed the way that I see occupational therapy. It became something that I really want to do in the future, something that I want to stick with.
And it's a non-traditional setting in the sense that there isn't an OT here full-time. But for us, although there's a learning curve figuring out, you know, how to find our role in the organization, it gave us the opportunity to kind of zoom out a little bit and see like a systems perspective of occupational therapy. So I feel like it really actually brought us back to the core of what makes OT OT.
Because we started as a social model during World War II. I don't know if you're familiar with occupational therapy and where we've gone. We started with a social and an occupation model where we were giving vets crafts to do and things to do, create meaning and purpose after all that has occurred. And then we went to a biomedical model to work within the hospitals and to get accreditation for an evidence-based profession. And we are evidence-based. We support our interventions with different types of interventions that have already happened through research. So we like to keep it that way. So we're now shifting to a social model, looking at the person, the emotional, physical, and the psychological aspects of their living and social aspects, but keeping that biomedical model, working right. with research, keeping it evidence-based to support what we do.
So where do you find most OTs work, in what environments?
Yeah, in the hospitals, right. In nursing homes.
Yeah, rehab.
Rehab. So I'm working really hard. I'm spinning my wheels like all of you are to make things happen to fill those gaps. Mm-hmm. Because I see the need, I see the role, and it's my job to help others understand. So through this podcast, we're connecting different professionals, helping them understand our role and how we can work together right. to create those programs, to help with research, to share research. Because what's happening is you have all these different professionals doing their own research on their own sites, mm-hmm. but we're not sharing that. So to be able to do that is a beautiful thing for me, mm-hmm. working with Dave and hopefully with others within the profession and within the organization, working with students, helping them understand that role.
Right, right.
So where do you see occupational therapy working with you at this point and beyond within your vision, the five-year vision?
Well, as I said, I think, you know, it is something to consider, you know, because there is a different perspective and how OT can help us with our consumers and daily life skills. So it's something for us to ponder, because as Dave said, I think up until OT was involved with PROS and FEP, it really wasn't a part of our thought process here to include OT. So I think it's something new for us to think about, Heidi, as to where it could fit in. But certainly as a resource to know you're out there, it really, I think, will now be part of our thought process. And we do, the staff do case planning and work with our consumers.
Because we do evaluations, mm-hmm. note writing.
Right.
We just started doing that within the program here, so it's actually in the records.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have your agencies that are supporting your programs,
right.
they
right.
can look and go, oh, this is where they started.
Right.
Here's the results.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the outcome. And it's not just based on what we think and our right. findings. It's also what the clients have to say.
Yeah.
What the students are saying mm-hmm. and how it benefited them mm-hmm. and how that's going to help them to extend outside of just this program.
Right, right.
To be able to sustain that mm-hmm. ability.
Yeah, I think it's clear that there's value. It's just about exploring now, you know, where it's used and how it's used and as we grow as an agency. But I think that we're clear on the value of occupational therapists. It's the tricky part that comes after that.
Right, and I think, you know, for me, for my purposes, you know, I had a little psychology background, but I'm a non-social worker person here, you know, in the fundraising department, and I glean a lot of information from what I hear from people, and what I'm hearing more and more at all of our meetings is that people aren't coming, you know, Karen always says there's no wrong door, and there's also no wrong condition. In other words, people have multiple things they're dealing with. Very few people are dealing with one diagnosis of a behavioral health issue. It usually is, I see more and more, it's a package of problems. So when you take a situation like that, you have more of an opportunity really to apply what you do to a situation like that, because you know there's more and different types of therapy needed. So I think that's very interesting too, is that the situations people find themselves in are confounding themselves to be, you know, more and more complex
right.
rather than simple.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, part of OT's model too is habits.
Right.
How their habits are, if you want to add a little bit to that about habits and roles and...
Well, you know, we had been reviewing some of the literature in vocational skills for occupational therapists and working with people who are trying to obtain and maintain employment. And in this article by Arbsman and Logsdon, which was a 2011 article from the American Journal of OT, they actually found that the skills that most directly help employment or support employment are social skills, communication skills, as well as those hard vocational skills. So for me, it's kind of showing the role of OT, looking at designing someone's entire life, their routines, their habits, their rituals, and using that to support, you know, more than one goal, and kind of taking this multimodal approach where you kind of mm-hmm. are looking at the whole person, their environments.
And that's such a big thing with the opioid crisis. Yeah. And you work with addiction here, which I think is fabulous, because that's such a problem. And you don't see too many agencies really grabbing the bull by the horns and saying, okay, where do we start? Mm-hmm. Where does the problem root? And breaking it down, because it isn't just they're taking drugs or they're drinking. It's what's creating those patterns and habits. Mm-hmm. Let's start from the beginning and breaking it down. So I think that's great.
We have a program called Adam Here. And the program was born from a mom who lost her son to an overdose. He also had several behavioral health issues that he was dealing with. But one of the things that happens in the program is there's a component called the beating hearts. So this group of moms gets together and they make beads, right? This is...
I actually bought one of the bracelets.
Oh, did you?
There you go.
That's so fun. I'm going, that sounds familiar. His mother, she was selling them, so
Yeah, and it's part of the therapy that goes along with the program and the bonding of these moms to get the, you know, to have them have something to do together, make these beads that say things that are positive reaffirmations of what they want to put out there in regard to their children that they've lost. And occupationally, it's what bonds them.
Right.
They are the beating hearts. They identify that way.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good word that you used, occupational. Would you like to explain, Christine, what occupation is? Because I think a lot of people think of occupation as just a job, gaining employment.
Right.
But it's more than that, and it's going to connect to what you had to say, Jonathan. Yeah,
that's where a lot of us get the question, well, don't you just help people get jobs? Isn't that what you do?
Yeah.
But occupations are everything that you do, whether it's eating or food shopping or making the bed, anything that you do during the day. Whether it's fun or it's work or anything. So it really complicates what occupation means to people. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people don't realize the importance of occupations, which occupations you choose, how often you do them, who you do them with. It all becomes very important. So like you said, Jonathan, having them do it together, it makes it more meaningful than if they were just sitting in a room by themselves.
Right. Absolutely.
Well, one of my favorite field trips is a couple of years ago, you took some of our clients to the supermarket, and you started to help them read food labels, right? Because nutrition and being healthy and eating right means you're going to get up and go to work and perform better. And I remember initially being, well, this is kind of an interesting field trip, you know, and I wasn't making the connection at first, and everybody came back and they were just blown away by, you know, food labels and what's in there. And then you've heard this story a couple of times. Some of your OTs made a board and they put food and then next to it baggies and how much sugar was in it and how much salt was in it. And it had such an impact on our clients. It was really the first time, you know, telling somebody don't eat something that's not good for you doesn't do the trick. But looking at a box of mac and cheese and having a baggie with all of that salt in there and sugar, who knew there was that much in there? And that visual was super powerful. And then they started to make the connection of how eating correctly and exercising. And then some of your OTs actually set their cell phones so on Saturdays and Sundays at 4 o'clock their alarm would go off and they knew to take a walk or do something other than passive recreation, right? Instead of watching television, they would get up and go out and do something physical. So, you know, you wouldn't necessarily connect food and reading labels with occupational therapy. I know I certainly did it, but, you know, I was on a learning curve as well. So.
And I think that's a good point, because how does occupational therapy differ from social work or anybody else that's working within the organization? And it's really not just about educating. So we're educating, we're breaking that down into small pieces, but now we're giving them things that are activity-based, that they can practice and learn so that it becomes a habit and it becomes part of their routine.
May also become a passion.
Right.
Because I remember I took a trip a while back and I had a painting lesson, a watercolor painting lesson. There was a gentleman who was teaching the class who told us a story, and basically the story was very simple. He was a Hell's Angel. He said he was someone we would not have wanted to know, and he got into a terrible motorcycle accident, and part of his recovery was to receive occupational therapy. So the teacher, the person in charge of assigning that, said to him, well, this was a choice of painting or woodworking, so I put you in woodworking because I knew you wouldn't want to paint. And he said, no, I want to paint. I don't want to go into woodworking. And so they put him in this watercolor painting class, and lo and behold, this is what this man does now, is he teaches watercolor painting.
That's a good point.
And so that occupational therapy became his passion, which became his career.
That's great.
And became his life.
Right. And that's where coming from a strength-based model, and not where we put limitations from our own thinking.
Right, yeah, exactly.
And just to follow that, right, when I first got into the field, employers would hire individuals with disabilities as if they were doing them a favor.
Yeah.
It was a charity sort of a thing. And now we're seen as a resource, right? So people call us, they see us as a resource, and that's kind of where we're at and where we want to keep on going. We want to be seen as a resource. And people with disabilities need to be seen as a resource.
Right, and I think the research states that there's a lack of resources, there's a lack of support, and there's a lack of programs to help make that possible. And I think you're working in that as Family Service League, members who are passionate about seeing this difference. And the same as occupational therapy students and occupational therapy educators, we want to be a part of that to fill those gaps. So I hope that this is a beginning to something beautiful that works with the mission of both of our organizations to help make that possible for the community.
Right.
So, and I know Dave, we're working on grant writing to help maybe provide some of those funds to provide different services for them and to get maybe more OT students here to make that happen, hopefully.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to make things happen and get looking at it from a different angle so that we can work more together.
Excellent.
But I appreciate all of your opportunities for our students. For me as an educator, I'm always growing, learning to become part of that and to help us better understand where we fit in mental health again.
Yeah, no, this is great. It helped, you know, we've learned a lot too, and they provide a valuable resource to our consumers who come here. So it's a good partnership.
So I would love to continue with collaborating.
Right.
And making things possible.
Good.
So thank you for your time, Karen, Jonathan. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
I know you have busy schedules, a lot on your plate. And thank you, Dave. Again, you all have busy lives here, and paperwork just gets to be more and more, so I understand that. But thank you again. I appreciate your time, and I'm just looking forward to continuing our partnership.
Good.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. And if there's any information that you need from me, feel free to reach out, Jonathan. You have my email.
We hope that you enjoyed our discussion with Karen Borstein, Jonathan Chenkin, and Dave Sullivan from Family Service League. Mental health is a prime area for occupational therapy to expand in and has been defined as an emerging practice area by the American Occupational Therapy Association. The fieldwork experience that Josh and I both had at Family Service League was an eye-opener for me in terms of mental health and played a key role in fueling my passion for this area of practice. And it's easy to see why. With staff and administrators like Karen, Jonathan, and Dave, wonderful things happen at Family Service League for clients and staff alike every day. If you feel inspired by our discussions and have feedback, comments, or suggestions, or if you'd like to be a guest on our podcast, please reach out and let us know. Our contact info can be found in the show notes. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time here on Well Matters.